You are listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 144, for the week of October 12th, 2011.
Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. My name is George Albor.
I'm Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And today we're talking a bit about games and culture, I would say. We're talking about Gears of War 3.
Sweet!
From
Sorry, I jumped the gun there.
Sorry there, Marcus. And, you know, we are going to talk about Gears 3 one day when we actually talk about the full game. Today is not going to be one of the sort of game podcasts. More specifically, I was interested in talking about Gears 3 as an idea, right? And its place within games culture and within the games industry at large. It's a huge game. I mean, what, the latest Gears 3 launched with like 1.5 million pre-orders or something ridiculous like that?
I mean, some people were throwing around numbers like it's the most pre-ordered game ever. You know, like it's definitely rivaling that of the big ones like Halo 3 and GTA 4 and all those.
And one of the interesting things about the game's critical response is that I've seen people who both say there's nothing new here, right? It's just the same Gears with slight tweaks. And anyone who likes the old Gears will like this one, right? Mm-hmm. Which isn't actually, I feel like it's not saying very much. It's just saying, okay, well, you know, this is a good game when it came out in Gears 1 and was good in Gears 2, and now it's good again in Gears 3, but it's nothing to, you know, to cry about. Yet at the same time, we get people's response saying, this is by far the best Gears of the entire series.
Yeah.
And I feel like for a game that's selling so well and is so sort of iconic for the genre, I feel like it just kind of has a weird place. And, you know, when we talked about Halo Reach, we were waxing poetic. There were tears in our eyes, Scott. We were talking about how Halo changed the gaming world, and you know, no one does it like Bungie does. And I'm not so sure we would respond to Gears 3 the same way.
Who so cries kinda, for Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe. So I think we should start off with, actually, you wrote a recent post called "A Triumphant Past, A Familiar Present, and an Uncertain Future" in regards to Gears 3. So I thought maybe we would start with you and maybe some of your thoughts. You haven't played Gears 3 yet, but maybe your thoughts on how it fits within the genre.
I played Gears 3. Obviously, we went over to your house and played like, you know, a full evening of, you know, Horde mode / Beast mode / co-op or whatever. But yeah, you know, as you're saying, I haven't gone through the campaign completely firsthand. But even so, and you've written about it a lot of people have written about it, and so I wrote a little thing about where I saw Gears coming from, and possibly where I saw it going to, or basically where I didn't see it going, because it's hard to tell what the future of Gears is going to be like. Yeah. And it's this, like you were saying, I feel like it's this really influential game that people definitely recognize it as influential, but I'm not sure that it has the same reverence that people have towards something like Half-Life or Halo.
Do you think it's that the first Gears were so over the top that people just didn't take it seriously?
I mean, I think that's one of, and you know me, like, I'm one of those people out there that kind of has fun somewhat apologizing, somewhat defending silly games.
Right.
Like, I've written countless thousands of words on God of War, which, yeah, like, I maintain is like a really deep game in some respects, not just mechanically.
Yeah.
And so I think there is something like that. I mean, it is, I don't blame anyone for seeing a game where the dude's bicep is bigger than two of his heads lengthwise.
Yeah.
And just kind of writing it off as like, okay, this is Space Marines and they're going to chomp on cigars and stomp on locusts. And that's pretty much the day.
Right.
But I think there is, you know, there's deeper stuff going on there with the story. But I think the main contribution is that I feel like Gears really, I feel like it just changed the way we relate to shooters and possibly even video games in general.
Mm-hmm. And certainly our expectations, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things is like to think about Gears 1, you have to go way back. You have to go back to 2006. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy.
I just have to say, 5 years ago is way back. It's just so interesting in the games industry.
Yeah, I mean, in the games industry, 5 years is a lifetime. Like, for most consoles, 5 years would be their entire life, and now we're kind of moved into this new world where consoles last a lot longer than they used to. Right. But, I mean, and if you think about it, Xbox 360 has gone through so many incarnations. It was basically a different platform in 2006.
Right.
Like, think about all the dashboard updates that have happened, like, all of the huge games that have come out. Like, Kinect, no one imagined Kinect in 2006.
Right.
So, like, we had this weird... And I feel like, and you know, I took a look at some of the older Gears reviews, and people were really impressed by Gears of War in 2006. They were like, this is the first next-gen game, just because it looked great, and it felt different from what people were doing. Like, before Gears, my biggest association with the 360 is, like, the King Kong game.
yeah.
Which is like
the film one based off the Peter Jackson film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like that would be the type of game that they would set up at like Best Buy when they wanted to show off the 360. Right. And it's like there's just no comparing those two.
Yeah.
And so I felt like Gears has had a very interesting trajectory as far as like where it's coming from and where it's going. So that was like kind of the gist of the post.
Yeah. The interesting thing, I think, about your post is there are so many aspects of Gears and the series at large that we can point to and say, look at what this is doing to the genre, right? Like, the cover mechanic is the most obvious one. Mm-hmm. But there are other sort of little mechanics that, you know, be maybe the gritty aesthetic, for example, which is not a mechanic per se, but would nonetheless affected the shooter genre, right? We get things that are, you know, similarly post-apocalyptic, Rage to... you know, Borderlands, mm-hmm. to, you know, everything basically except for the Halo franchise.
Yeah. Like, how influential was it? And it's hard to really tease this apart, but, like, you know, Gears introduced us to the whole spectrum of brown color wheel, right? Like, it's... we're just now kind of getting out of, like, as an industry, I feel like.
Yeah. And, you know, I wonder if maybe some of... I don't know. I don't want to call it non-appreciation because I think people do appreciate Gears, but I don't know if it's something that is given the same sort of recognition as something that was as influential as it actually was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's partially because we've grown sick of what it has created. You know? Like, Gears 3 has birthed repetition and we're growing tedious of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe when we look back on Gears, we're maybe coloring our view with all of the other games that are like Gears or try to be like it in some way.
Yeah. And that's one of my major points when I was writing it, is that like the cover mechanic specifically, we might as well just go straight for the biggest influence. I mean, the cover mechanic specifically is now almost a cliche.
Right.
Like, to say something has like, oh, it's like a Gears cover mechanic, that you don't even need to say anything more. If you ever have played that game and if you continue to play video games, you pretty much know exactly what you're getting into.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare that a game does that and sets a template for pretty much every other game subsequent to it.
Yeah. I was playing Battlefield 3, and it's funny because now it's jarring that there isn't a cover mechanic.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What am I doing just standing here? I should be, like, hugging this object.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm trying to think of precedents. I mean, obviously, there are things like Super Mario 64 kind of introduced a movable three-dimensional camera.
Yeah. And I would say Halo's overshield.
Yeah.
Regenerating shield.
The regenerating thing. Z-targeting for Zelda. Like, we still kind of call things Z-targeting in a weird way. But there's not... Games don't really... There's very few games that have that lasting influence on others. Like, even kind of bleeding outside of their own genre. Like, things like... there's even first-person shooters that... Even, like, the most humble ones. Like, remember when we were playing Call of Juarez? And they kind of implemented a weird first-person cover system?
Yeah.
Like, it's just the idea that... a shooter or pretty much any game now has to have some kind of cover is largely indebted to Gears of War.
Yeah. Do you think that Gears then gets shortchanged?
It's weird though, because I think that it did its job so well that people don't really notice.
Yeah.
You know, like, the best thing about it is that it did it so... It integrated it to the game so well, and it is so transferable to other games that it doesn't feel out of place anywhere.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to trace back where it's from and you know, how influential it actually was. So it's like, it might not get enough credit, but in a weird way, that's the most flattering thing about it. Like, it created something that's so applicable to a bunch of other games.
Yeah. It's strange, because it does get credit in the sense that everyone buys it up, right? Yeah. I feel like, you know, Gears 3 marks the end of the Gears series. Ostensibly, I don't think that they're planning on making anything else.
Well, certainly until Gears of War 4 comes out and, like, Marcus...
Well, prequels,
like,
and...
Exactly.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, even if they do something else, I think at least the conclusion of the game seems to telegraph that the series as we know it is over. Right, mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get a sort of Halo Reach of Gears Reach, right? But
maybe at the next E3 there will be a trailer that'll start off in like a vascular system and work its way out, and all of a sudden it'll be Marcus.
Nice.
Shit. Well, yeah. I mean,
even as a franchise, like, it just feels like they wrapped it up. You know, mm-hmm. It feels like the creators are done with it, mm-hmm. Just intellectually speaking. And I don't know. Maybe that's something that we should mourn. Maybe that's something that we should, you know, recognize. Maybe there should be a pillar somewhere of, like, Marcus, you know?
Well, what do they say in Firefly? Every man that's ever had a statue built out of him is some kind of son of a bitch.
That's absolutely true.
It's probably fitting for Marcus. But, I mean, it's something that... It also changed the way I look at Epic Games, the studio. Because before Gears of War, I just thought of them mainly as the Unreal Tournament folks. And I knew that I knew that they did engine work. Like, they were making a big push for, you know, tech, basically.
And still do engine work.
And that's the thing. With Gears, it only helped them. Now everybody's using the Unreal Engine.
Yeah, Mass Effect is on the Unreal Engine.
Batman is on the Unreal Engine. Like, it's just huge. Everything, I think, what is that game that came out last winter? Enslaved, like, that's basically a platformer. I mean, yeah, it's just a really versatile tool that they used. And I think they showed with Gears. Like, Gears is a great tech demo for them, too.
Yeah.
They're like, look at what you could do with this thing, because look at what we can do, and we'll help you do this. It's like, oh, great, we don't have to write our own engine now. Excellent.
Yeah, especially when something is so successful as Gears, right? You just go, look, we proved it. We can make massive amounts of money.
Yeah, which is different from... what id is doing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, like, id was always the other big engine company. And it's not that, you know, they make bad games. It's just that they make one very specific type of game. And sometimes it's not even all that great. Sorry to all the Rage people out there, but, you know.
I mean, to be fair, Rage has been fairly well panned by a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I've heard very few complaints about the visual fidelity of that game.
Right.
At the very least. Yeah.
Right.
But on the subject of, I guess, Epic and Gears as well, how do you think that this game will be remembered, you know? Because I think, to some extent, 20 years from now, people will remember Halo, mm-hmm. right? It will still go down as one of the founding shooters of our time. And yeah. I don't, maybe this is so a sort of weird question, because games are still pretty young, but I think mm-hmm. we are getting to that point now where we are thinking critically about what games are in our canon, right? And how we remember sort of the past games that we once played. Certainly with the big franchises, right? Mm-hmm. But we have those franchises now. I mean, 2006, like you said, is relatively a long time ago. And 10 years from now, maybe Gears 3 will still be remembered fondly.
It's hard because I think, you know, we talk about Halo a lot. And I think one of Halo's biggest triumphs was kind of making this extended universe for itself while the series was still going on.
Yeah.
Like, one of the reasons why I still remember Halo is because they did a great ad campaign that made it feel like there was a larger war going on in between Halo 2 and Halo 3 that I just wasn't aware of.
So you didn't like the Mad World Gary Jules cover?
It's very iconic, but I still don't... It's not as... it doesn't really... Like, Halo's great, like, subtlety in the marketing campaign was inviting you to finish the fight.
Right.
Like, it was directly involving the player. Like, you're a part of this story. And the Gears were very, like, they were interesting. And it was kind of shocking to see a weird contrast between, like, you know, here's an emo song and here's, like, a beefy dude shooting a machine gun.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily, like, be a part of this story. It's more of, like, look at this spectacle rather than participate in it.
I think that's a really interesting point, that to some extent how we remember these major franchises is based upon how we think about their expanded universe that they create.
Yeah.
Because the cogs are unique and certainly identifiable amongst a profile of other shooter protagonists. But you're right. I don't think that Sarah is an incredibly mapped out world, even in Gears 3, which I think does a better story than its predecessors.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's clearly a huge expanded universe. I mean, we went on Gearsopedia a little bit earlier, and it's like, the Pendulum Wars, they lasted for 80 years, and there's like three books and graphic novels, and like, apparently there's a lot of characters in Gears 3 that are kind of introduced in the novels and in the graphic novels.
Yeah.
That are, I mean, they're not, it's not like just, you know, flat out fan service, but it's kind of it's a reward to players that have, you know, been through the entire expanded universe. You know, it's acknowledging their involvement in it.
Yeah. Well, before we get back on the subject of Epic, I think we should take a detour and talk a bit about some of the things that Gears 3 does differently, and whether or not you also think that they are going to be as influential as some of the other things that Gears has done.
Yeah.
The skins, for example. They sell weapon skins.
Right.
And a slew of them. There's a ton of different... You could make your gun pink. You could make it in, like, cheetah stripes.
There's a sweet rainbow one that kind of animates...
Yeah, there's probably a Jack in the Box one.
We can set them up with a sweet marketing campaign.
And it's interesting because that's the sort of thing that they're bringing, I guess, from other. You know, it's like the hats, basically, from Valve.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's weird because again, I see Gears as a sort of iconic placeholder in the genre and in the industry at large. Is this something that they're validating by having the skins, or is this something that others will say, oh, well, Gears is doing it, let's do it as well?
Like, there's going to be some horse armor for Gears pretty soon.
Well, I mean, the weird thing is not everything is copied from Gears. You know, yeah. I've never seen another game do active reload, which is still one of my favorite mechanics of all time.
I mean, quick mini-tangent about active reload. I mean, people make a lot of jokes about gamification, but, like, gamifying reloading sequences is genius. Like,
yo, dog, I heard you like games.
Yeah.
So put games in your game.
I mean, I just cannot believe that more developers have not used some kind of active reload thing.
Yeah. And in anything, it doesn't even have to be reloading. It could be any form of, take the normally trite thing and...
Yeah. The risk reward of trying to do something fast for a bonus or safe and take more time. And if you mess up, a punishment, like an explicit punishment for messing up. I don't know. It's something that is... I don't know if people just don't like it or if they don't want to implement it, but it's a great thing. Anyway, end tangent on active reload. Horse armor. Okay.
Yeah.
The weird thing about the skins is that that's been around for a long time. Like, you know, we were just making jokes about Oblivion and everything. And it feels almost backwards, you know?
Yeah.
What does Valve do for hats? Explain that to me. I never really get hats.
The hats are things that, well, you could buy hats.
Right.
You could trade hats and sell hats. But more often than not, I believe you just find them while you play. There's like a certain, you know, odds of finding something based upon the number of hours you play Team Fortress 2.
Because I know some people at a certain point were making custom maps to kind of farm hats.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Like, there's certain types of, you know, you have to fall from a certain... level, or you have to get X number of kills, and they just kind of make a kill room to let people farm the special hat or something like that.
Yeah.
And so there's like a hat economy in Team Fortress 2, basically.
I mean, everyone makes fun of the hat business with Valve.
But people love it.
I mean, people consume it. I don't know if it's love.
I guess that's true.
Maybe infatuation, it's just... maybe.
I think that, well, the whole point is that compared to something like that, just buying a skin for your gun is laughably crude.
Yeah.
You know, all it does, all it is is rewarding people with money who want to spend it.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing really about any kind of skill set that you need other than the skill to input your credit card for some more Microsoft points.
Yeah. The funny thing is, you were mentioning it's sort of a call from the past, And I think that some of the other, you know, the tower defense aspects of Beast Mode and Horde Mode, for example, are similar in some way. I think they fit really well in the game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when people are criticizing Gears 3 for not being that different or that unique, yeah, I wonder if it's a sort of confidence issue where they decided that they wanted to implement these things that are growing in popularity and they're sort of watering down their own brand.
Yeah, I mean, you can see, you know, in Horde Mode where you have this in-game economy where you set up your defenses, and you can see influences from, like, what people would consider the more casual side of the industry, and that's definitely not, you know, it's not a huge set piece, it's not, like, yet another huge dragon beast to slay in single player, but it's almost as impressive to me because they're continually blurring the lines between mechanical genres.
Yeah.
Who is that person that... Gosh, I forget who it was. It was a fairly well-respected game designer, I think, who was saying that basically the RPG... All games are RPGs now. Like, what we used to consider an RPG with, like, stats and customization and everything, it's just being absorbed by everything.
Right.
And Gears is just contributing. It's just adding another step. Like, now all games are also part tower defense or part, you know, micro-economies or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to think of Gears both as a sort of outlier from other genres and just more, and it, you talk about this in your post, but more just indicative of the time and place that we are now in games. Mm-hmm. Like, they are just, if we had to pick one game out of all shooters that described the sort of state of the industry right now, maybe Gears 3 would be a really good choice.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely become that, or the, you know, the state of shooters versus the big holdout like Call of Duty. And even Call of Duty implements a lot of that. You know, Call of Duty has its really influential perk and experience system. It doesn't quite have the mechanical conventions like cover, or, you know, doesn't explicitly do the tower defense stuff, but there's like a couple mm-hmm. big pillars that are like the signs of our times, basically. And I think Gears is one of them.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about that Gears 3 does is offer their Season Pass, which, for people who don't know, for I think it's $30, you could buy basically all of the next 4 installments of their DLC ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so you'll automatically download those. I think you probably get a bundle of skins, because why not?
Why not?
And and I think, you know, they just announced the first DLC, which is, you know, some map packs, some new skins, and some new, like, changes to Beast Mode and Horde Mode that will launch November 1st, mm-hmm. right, for $10. So you're saving $10 by buying it now.
Yep.
Out of curiosity, what do you think of this sort of pricing sort of marketing scheme?
It kind of reminds you of what Call of Duty is doing, right?
What's that?
I mean, you know, they're part of the Call of Duty Elite package is if you subscribe to it, you'll get all the DLC and you'll get it, you know, on a certain date and it'll be bundled together and so forth.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, they're not going as far with like a true subscription service, but they're inching towards what people are trying to do with, you know, with making it a service rather than just a product, I guess.
Well, and the other thing I was thinking of was just that, you know, consoles haven't done a very good job of changing their pricing models. Mm. Like, it's usually you buy something for 10 Microsoft points or $60 and that's that. Yeah. There's no, like, Xbox sales, right? Yeah. So this feels to me like a sort of publisher way of going around and saying, okay, well, we are going to offer some sort of sale.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's great for them, right? They know exactly, well, you know, the people who buy the season pass are their number of hardcore fan base. So they'll get some nice statistics right off the bat based upon their consumers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they'll be able to gauge what the interest is and how maybe to lure in the people that don't want to prepay for all of that. Right. You know, they'll want to see how the core players are using it. Like, are the core players even using the skins or the different character models or whatever? Like, is that even an attractive thing for players, let alone, you know, core players or casual players?
I've seen some use of, like, pink skins, but not too many.
It seems like the pink skins would be a tactical mistake.
Well, if people want to show off, you know, it's the brightest, most colorfully distinct skin.
So they're like, I'll even paint a target on my back and you still can't shoot me. Like, it's just a trash talking.
I think it's more when they're chainsawing you, they can say your mother is a classy lady and, you know.
I mean, there's a whole... I think that's another thing that Gears did really well, that something like Call of Duty also did, is create a like a culture around the game.
Yeah.
Like every good Twitterer, I follow Cliff Bleszinski on Twitter. and like every week he's like retweeting someone who's got a Gears tattoo.
Wow.
And or someone who's like, you know, bought this huge model of Marcus Fenix and put it on their mantle at home or something, and like he's actively cultivating the culture around the game, not just the game's fiction itself.
Right. And I think that, you know, judging from interviews by him, he kind of sees that as his job.
Yeah. He's one of those you know, very similar to Ken Levine, he's like one of those very public creators that takes an interest in his work, you know, yeah, publicly and promoting it.
Would you ever buy the season pass?
I mean, I'm a sucker for online shooters, which is why I try not to own or play too many of them.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you won't have time to do this podcast.
Exactly. Like, I know my limits. And, like, it's like, I can have a couple of multiplayer matches now and then. But if I, you know, it's like, I don't know if I'd want to brew beer, because then you just drink beer all the time. I don't know if I would want a, like, a... I don't know if I'd want a season pass for Gears, because then I would just want to play it more. Like, it's a very good way of, like, psychologically embedding the game. Like, if I paid for this thing, I have to play it, or else it's a waste, right? Like, it's a sunk cost fallacy problem.
Well, and every time that they announce new DLC, you go, oh, I still have Gears to play.
Yeah.
Go back, get sucked into it all over again. Decide to buy that pink skin you've wanted for so long.
I mean, it's, again, this is going towards the reality of the times, which is how people are monetizing games now past the single purchase option. Right. You know, like, things are starting to look more microtransaction, either like free-to-play RPGs out there, or, you know, I hate to say it, but like Facebook style games. Like, that's how those models work, like making people think that they're losing value if they don't play the things that they have.
Right. What about another game? What if you had a single-player game that said, you know, every few months, if you subscribe to the season pass, you'll get new single-player content.
Two more colossi every month.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
Oh, man, don't give them any ideas. They're already taking too long on The Last Guardian. We don't need them to, like, upset their whole pricing structure to delay it further. It's hard to know how attractive that stuff is, you know, sight unseen, but yeah. I think it's definitely how games are going, because I think the App Store market and Facebook and free-to-play stuff present a compelling model, especially in a time where people are kind of reluctant to sink $60 into one single game that they might not play all that much. Kind of get people roped in early on, and then maybe even get more money out of them than they would have originally gotten anyway with a $60 game. Right.
Because they might have only bought like two DLC instead of three or four.
Right. I mean, it adds up slowly, but, you know, if you can continue that relationship, then not only are you getting more money with every DLC pack, you're continuing to keep your player community like at a certain level population wise and also all those players are basically doing advertising for you.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, that sounds like it's a really negative connotation, but right. I should say it's kind of interesting that I think it sort of solidifies the relationship between the player and the developer, right? Because now you have certain expectations.
Yeah.
And the developers have certain obligations to satisfy you, right? You've already spent $30. They said that you would get good DLC that was worth your money. And you sort of have that expectation. It's not like, oh, well, you're going to wait to see the DLC and then buy or beware. You should have looked up a review first. They're making a promise with this $30. And I think that that type of pressure might be actually healthy for a relationship between a developer and player.
Especially with developers like Epic, who have a lot of autonomy. I think that's why Valve can get away with it as well. But when you're under a larger publisher, I think you lose a lot of flexibility, because the publisher has certain demands that you have to meet as a developer, and they have certain obligations they have to meet to shareholders. They can't just kind of mess around like a private company can.
Right.
I wish they would do more of that, really. Like, it's funny. Like, I think I'm this way with Uncharted. Like, if I could buy the standalone multiplayer of Uncharted, I'd probably do that.
Well, if you go to Subway,
if I talk to Jared, maybe he can hook me up.
Before we end, I want to talk a bit about Epic as a whole. And I know that, you know, Gears 3 isn't over yet. They still have like four DLCs to go.
Sure.
But if we imagine this being the sort of proper end to the franchise, where do you see Epic coming after this?
It's so hard. I mean, did you play any Unreal Tournament or just Unreal games?
Yeah, I mean, back in the day.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, a little bit. Not a great deal.
What did you think of the Unreal games?
I mean, they're hectic and not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Incredibly competitive as well.
I was more of a Quake man myself, but I definitely, like, you know, I saw the appeal to that, and it was definitely of a certain time and place. But it's weird. The Gears of War has changed what I thought Epic did.
Yeah.
And now, well, I don't know what to expect from them. It literally has,
right? I mean, how many people at Epic are even, you know, that familiar with... I mean, of course, they're familiar with Quake, but, you know, to what extent are they even the same team anymore?
I have no idea what the turnover is. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of new people, especially with all the Gears work that they had to do. But, I mean, it's still Cliff Bleszinski. Like, he... Yeah. You know? Maybe we'll get a new Jazz Jackrabbit game or something. Like, that was... like... Yeah. It's just hard to know where things are going because I thought I had a picture of what Epic Games was in my head.
Yeah.
And then Gears basically upset that whole thing. And so now it's like, oh, they have the potential to basically turn around and like do a completely different thing, you know? And so it's hard for me to know where it's going. Or maybe this is a better way to think about it. Like, what do you want from Epic?
Well, I mean, that's kind of my big concern for them, right? Like, when we were talking about the end of Halo Reach, we were talking about where Bungie would be going after that franchise. Mm. And they'd already announced that they had this sort of sci-fi IP in the works. And we were saying, you know, now that they're free from Microsoft, the world is their oyster, right? Yeah. They can do whatever they want. They're not obligated to making what they were now. And they could really show their sort of true potential. And when I look at Gears, and we were talking about its place in history, right? Mm. I feel like they've got all this burden on them now. To sort of live up to what Gears was, even though people don't even... I mean, maybe this is just my assessment of it, but it still feels like people don't even recognize Gears for what it is, right? Don't give it the type of Halo respect that maybe it deserves.
Or at least they're more tired of it. Like, reviews were great, but there was a certain undertone in many of the reviews that were like, I want... And some people explicitly asked that, like, this is great and everything, but it just makes me wonder what's next.
Right, and I feel like maybe... Maybe nothing that great is next.
Yeah.
Maybe they, and it's just to some extent I feel almost bad for Epic, and I think that's they have a great team. They've put together amazing games, and I'm sure the next game is going to be an interesting thing to experience. But in terms of sort of the pressure that they have on them coming from Gears, mm-hmm. It's not something that I would at all be eager to feel. You know?
Yeah.
And at least in terms of my reading of the end of Gears, right, the tone that that game sets, it almost feels to me that like they knew it was a sort of burden, that they were almost eager to be done with it.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they will go, if they'll make a mechanical shift. Like, it's a big change to go from a really, like, run-and-gun Twitch Unreal Tournament-style game to a more methodical, plodding, cover-based third-person shooter. Like, it's a pretty... You know, there's a pretty big gulf between those two styles, and I wonder if they will do something. I mean, because we're coming up on kind of the next generation of technology fairly soon, and I'm thinking that maybe then they'll just try something completely new. Like, it'll Connect. Still be... Yeah, well, like...
Locust animals?
You'll fumbles. Have to, like, actually yell when you do an active reload, or it won't count. I think that there's a possibility that they'll do some type of still, you know, shooter action type game, but maybe do something with squad mechanics, like try to really figure out how to make it so you can command a team and it makes it feel as natural as pressing A to snap to cover.
Right.
Because I feel like we still haven't quite reached that point where commanding AI squad mates is completely seamless.
Yeah.
And you joke about Kinect, but I mean, there's... Kinect has potential to do that, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Voice commands and stuff.
Well,
and
certainly BioWare hopes so.
Yeah, and like BioWare is doing what I consider a very conservative approach to that. They're basically just, it's the most rudimentary voice commands. You know, you basically are saying like option one, option two, you know, like, and so But and you're commanding one or two other people. But imagine if there was a larger, like, army or squadron of people, you know. And if you want to keep it in the Gears universe, you could do, like, Pendulum Wars or whatever, and you're, like, a commander. But, like,
right.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they just left third-person cover-based shooters behind, just kind of how they left first-person shooters behind and tried something completely new. Because, I mean, you run the risk of becoming, like, a steady achiever, but nothing that really wows people anymore.
If 4 years goes by, right, and Epic comes out with a new IP, and it's a new universe, different aesthetic, but basically the same sort of Gears game repackaged, would you be that disappointed?
I wouldn't personally, because I really like what they do, but I think people would be kind of irritated, especially after the reception of Gears of War 3 was like, yes, this is a great Gears of War game. And if they make it again, people will be like, all right, you know, this is yet another great Gears of War game. You know, like, it has a potential of turning into Madden, just, basically.
But doesn't that just kind of make you sad, though? Like, even a great achievement over and over again is still a great achievement, right?
I don't know. How do you feel about The Legend of Zelda?
Touche. Well, but I mean, at least Legend of Zelda has spirit tracks. There's, like, you know, changing aesthetic completely with Wind Waker.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe cel-shaded Gears of War.
Yeah, that'll change things.
I just feel like that Zelda is a cautionary tale for Epic.
But people fucking love Zelda.
I know, and people love Gears. Like, let no one get the wrong idea. We're not saying that Gears of War doesn't, like, get the sales or even necessarily the respect that it deserves. Like, we're just kind of talking about the broader, like, cultural impact or respect, you know, like, I don't know, reverence almost. I mean, like, yeah. People love Zelda games, and they'll buy millions of them whenever they come out, but very few people herald the new Zelda. Like, they would, like, for example, like, something like Skyrim or even, like, Dead Island, like, gets way more buzz than Skyward Sword is getting.
Yeah.
Even though I can pretty much guarantee you that Skyward Sword is going to be a better game than either of those.
Right.
Like, as far as how well it's put together and how glitchy or not glitchy or, like, how, you know, carefully the art is maintained, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's like, if you want to keep doing that, that's fine, but you'll run into this... I think you'll run into people's reluctance to laud you over and over again when you're doing something very comfortable.
Right.
But then again, then you'll just change it and people will be pissed.
Yeah. Alrighty.
I don't know. What do you want to see for the next Gears? I've been rambling on about my Gears love. What do you want to see for the next Epic/Gears project?
I mean, I think kind of like you, I'd like to see something that's just completely different. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, I don't think it's just that I'm growing tired of Gears, because, you know, if 4 years went by and I got another great Gears game, I think I would still play it and I would still be satisfied.
Definitely.
But I almost feel like for the designers, it's probably healthier for them and for Epic as a studio to just try something risky, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think they tried something risky in the first Gears.
Yeah.
And to some extent, narratively speaking, I think Gears 3 is a relatively risky story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they'll have a better time doing something bizarre.
Completely bizarre. Like, they'll get...
Pikmin style, like, Gears. I don't care.
They'll get Suda51 on staff and on Epic and just... put him in a room and tell him to come up with something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of, you know, when we think about the future and we think about the past, like, it's sometimes it's weird to think of what these iconic studios are going to be like in 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, how are we going to be talking about Epic in the future?
Yeah.
You know, like, even id, you know, like, Raven was a relatively big software studio. Now they're gone. You know, mm-hmm. Like, there's so much change that happens in the industry.
Yeah.
That when I see a game come out like Gears 3 that marks the end of a franchise, it sort of, to me, marks the sort of the first beginning point in what might one day be a very large transition.
Mm-hmm. How about, how long do you give them until the next Gears game is released, whatever it is? Because there's no way they'll let this sleeping dog lie, right?
You don't think so?
I think within a year, we'll have some sort of Gears of War. Like,
announcement?
By the next... And I don't know, maybe they'll do like a Microsoft thing where they spin off the Gears franchise to a sub-studio, like what's happening with Halo.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, can you imagine? Like, I can't imagine Microsoft not pressuring them for another Gears game.
I don't know. I would like to say that I want to see a franchise being okay with the end of their franchise.
Yeah.
You know? Could see something, I agree with you, I could see something where they shuttle it off to a smaller studio.
Mm.
You know, Epic's already worked with, what, Play with People or something?
Oh, People Can Fly?
People Can Fly.
Yeah.
You know, so I could see something like that happening where they just say, yeah, you could take over the next iteration. But I would love to see just Epic give it up. Yeah, absolutely.
Roadie run off into the sunset.
Exactly.
All right, well, I guess we'll roadie run off into the sunset now. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our website. We also write over at PopMatters, so come and check us out over there, PopMatters.com.
All right, until next time, everyone, take it easy.
Bye-bye. Every time